Welcome back to Disney Dependent. I'm Sarah Chilcott.
And I'm...
What? Luke Skywalker?
A 40-year-old with toys that he shouldn't have. Yeah, he did it!
Woo! Please don't break it.
Yeah, James is playing with his lightsaber because...
There's awesome.
Either a ghost in this room...
Yeah.
Or his lightsaber is randomly making noises behind my head again. And
yeah, Deanna, does yours do that?
No, yours already did this once before.
But it sounded like...
It sounded like the pyong this time. That time it sounded... Or this time it sounded different.
It did. It sounded more like bells.
Yeah, like an alarm on a phone. We don't know what's going on.
But now James has the lightsaber in hand. So if I hear it again, I'll know it's not from that.
Yeah.
He's not going to put it away. I can tell by the way that his face looks.
But it only happens when I lean forward. So I just keep leaning forward.
trying to force it.
Trying to make it happen, and it's not happening.
It keeps the goblins away if I lean forward.
There's nothing over here that would be making it.
Well, here's the headline news, guys. We're back. It's been an entire week for you. It's been like 5 minutes for us. Because we're pros. At production.
Production.
We hope you had a good week. We hope the last episode entertained your ass. And we hope that you're getting ready for the holidays.
It's December 4th at this point. You better be fully in it.
Get some. Oh, I bet your house is so cute and decorated by now. If it's not, get it together. Figure it out by now. We have a hard rule. In this podcast,
we have a hard rule.
If you ain't celebrating Christmas by November 26 minimum. No, sorry, no, November 25 minimum.
The day after Thanksgiving.
I don't know what day anything is.
I think it's the day after Thanksgiving.
It's not. I think it's the
24th.
The 24th.
It's the 20th.
Is it?
It's Thanksgiving's the 23rd.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
None of this has anything to do with anyone who's listening because it's well past it at this point.
We are talking about the past.
Okay. The point is, if you're not celebrating by now, you're not welcome here anymore. That's the truth.
He is lying.
What
you're
if they
welcome.
Don't celebrate Christmas?
You need to. Look, Christmas doesn't have to be about your religion or whatever. Just have fun, eat some cookies, watch Elf, relax a bit, don't take yourself so seriously.
I did get a peppermint mocha the other day.
And it was delish, wasn't it?
Oh my god, it was so good.
Sarah, there's a new coffee shop called Big River Coffee in Hillsboro, okay. Right off TV Highway, basically Cornelius Pass and TV Highway-ish.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Good to know.
That's all I got for
you. I never go that way.
It's really good. It's really big.
I try to avoid that whole end of town.
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the coffee shop's great. Mm-hmm. We went there today. It's got a little fireplace. It's very cozy.
Nice.
Tasty.
Got really good coffee. And they're going to decorate for Christmas.
My friend at work told me about whipped cream that they apparently sell at Target.
Yeah.
That is hot cocoa flavored. And I need to get
my hands
on it.
Don't tell him about that.
Wait, that is such a circular weirdness.
I'm just going to... Hose it straight down my throat.
Well, often people put whipped cream on top of hot chocolate.
Yeah.
So now you get hot chocolate flavored whipped cream on top of hot chocolate.
Yes.
This is hot chocolate-ception. This is getting nuts.
I know.
I had hidden a few of our niece Charlotte's chocolate chip cookies that she made for us the other day.
And what did I do last night?
I had hidden them in the freezer and I pulled them out. There were five of them. They're about this big.
Yep.
He saw them. He went mad.
Yeah.
He yanked them out of my hand and took three of them and ate them immediately.
Yeah, heated them up.
He heated them up on a non-microwave safe dish and burned himself.
Burned my hand. Yep.
Scurrying like a rat.
And I ate them. And I ate them fast. And I felt horrible after it. And I'll do it again.
Oh, three cookies ain't nothing, bro.
So I said this is the real headline. This is actually the headline news. I, James Ian MacMillan, James Ian for podcast listeners, I am making a pie for Thanksgiving this year.
Yes, a moose pie.
Yeah, as my parents called it, a moose pie. It's not going to have moose in it because gross. Probably gonna make an apple pie. Okay, it's gonna be a classic.
Yeah, we all know that James likes to go on binges of really random content, and now he's obsessed with baking.
Yeah, I'm really into baking now.
You watched the Great British Baking Show? Oh, yeah.
Of course, that's what started it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah, when I say I'm into baking, I've baked one time. So it's not like I'm doing... Ever?
He's baked half of a time.
Probably.
I made him knead a focaccia a few times.
Yeah. Interesting.
It didn't turn out great.
No.
But it was okay. Didn't turn out great.
We'll see how this pie turns out.
Yeah.
I'm going to be standing behind him, giving him instructions, but not touching anything.
Yeah, that's the rule. She can't touch anything.
Are you going to make the crust?
Yeah.
All of it, yeah.
I have a great recipe. You cannot screw it up.
No, don't give him that. I want him to suffer.
But it's, I mean, it's like, it's all from scratch.
Well, do you have an apple pie recipe?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, we'll let you guys know how that turned out.
Well, I hear some.
This just in, it's still 54 and cloudy at not Disneyland.
And still 63 and rain at Disneyland.
All right. Well, recently we covered how the film Wizard of Oz compared to the written source material and can see how often the book is not only darker than the film, but much, much weirder. This brings us to this week's topic.
Uh-oh.
Now, I think we can all agree that whether you love it or hate it, you should love it. Robert Zemeckis' 1994 film Forrest Gump is a fairly bananas movie with totally insane storylines showcasing moments in American history through the lens of a low IQ Alabaman.
Oh. It truly is wacky.
It is a wild... Imagine the pitch meeting for that film. Like, yeah, that's a real dicey line.
I don't even know how you pitch it.
That is a fine line.
Yeah.
Well, and the source material is all of that and way more. There is a lot to cover in this one, so I'm going to just get on it.
Buckle in.
Did you have how Tom Hanks got his voice in that movie in there somewhere?
No.
Okay, a quick little tip.
Yeah.
He apparently, he's working on like a Southern accent, and he's also trying to be kind of dim-witted.
Yeah.
But like not sound R-worded. He was trying to be appropriate here.
Ash and I just looked at each other.
That's a last podcast. Yes. Your mom's house podcast. I always say R-worded. Anyway, he was trying to do it delicately. And there was some guy on set that apparently talked just like that.
Oh, boy.
And he was like, that's the voice.
I'm just going to follow him around.
That's what I'm going to do.
I heard that it was the kid that played young Forrest Gump that came up with kind of that dialect.
Maybe that's what maybe I'm conflating a guy on set with maybe the kid because he was on set. Maybe that's what it was, because Tom Hanks had like a version of it, and then when they started rehearsing, maybe that's what it was. He heard the kid because he has like that perfect. That's and apparently that's really his accent. That's really how the kid talked.
But like he started that, so that's why. Yeah.
Wild.
Deep South.
Deep.
Okay, so
probably
this
is a little too deep, right?
Yeah.
There should be a depth of the South that we allow.
Okay.
If it gets too deep, knock it off.
Head more towards Canada.
Fill it in. You're too deep.
Too deep at that point.
Okay, so the novel was written in 1986 by a Southern man named Winston Groom.
Oh, these names.
Born in 1943 in D.C., Groom was the only child of a lawyer father who left a job at the Pentagon to practice law in Mobile, Alabama, and an English teacher mother who would inspire Winston's lifelong love of literature.
Ashley, what is my favorite Southern man's name? Shelby Foote.
Oh, yeah, Shelby Foote.
Shelby Foote. That's one of the guys in Ken Burns' documentaries.
Okay.
Especially the Civil War documentary. I mean, it sounds like he just molasses just spilling out of his mouth.
His name is Shelby.
His name is Shelby Foote. What a name.
So the novel made very little impact upon its release and had all but faded into obscurity before the decision was made to adapt it into a film. The New York Times did a profile on Groom following the movie's 1994 release, where he asked quizzically, "Where were you 8 years ago? It's the same damn book." So Groom's original Forrest Gump is a 6'6", 240-pound neurodivergent genius who begins his narration with, let me say this, being an idiot is no box of chocolates.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
Despite his low IQ, he is made out to be full of wisdom. He says that he can think things pretty good, but when he tries saying or writing them, it kind of come out like jello.
Oh, no.
That's written down in a book somewhere.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
His mathematical abilities as a savant and feats of strength lead him into all kinds of fun adventures.
By the way, you're also just describing how I feel about life.
Yeah.
This is my headspace.
Groom was inspired for the character by both a 60-minute segment on savants and hearing his father recall a slow-witted childhood neighbor in Alabama that he thought such a character would make a really good protagonist.
Interesting.
So the novel is largely told in flashbacks by Forrest himself, so it takes viewers on a trip through the latter half of 20th century America through the eyes of a guy who somehow manages to experience every triumph and tragedy that the era had to offer.
Truly.
Mm-hmm.
And since it's written from Forrest's perspective, the novel is intentionally filled with spelling and grammatical errors, which I'd imagine is pretty distracting for the reader.
Oh, that would be awful.
I know.
In the book, does he do all of that shit?
And more.
The Vietnam, the ping pong, all of it?
And more.
Wow.
While the book still retains his childlike personality and innocence, novel Forrest can be really gruff. He swears, and he has a history of violence.
Wow.
He's like Glad Lenny.
Glad they left that out.
Yeah, a bit more like Lenny.
A little rough around the edges.
All of the main side characters in the film, Mama, Jenny, Lieutenant Dan, Bubba, they all originate in the book. But the book uses the characters very differently than the film and also has a lot of extra material that wasn't adapted. And we're going to go into some of those surplus storylines.
Oh, boy.
So novel Forrest meets Bubba during college football rather than at basic training.
Okay.
Bubba still dies in the book and Forrest is injured and develops his ping pong game while recovering.
Okay.
Like we know. Mm-hmm. But in the novel, while playing in a tournament in China, Forrest also inadvertently saves the life of Mao Zedong.
What?
And meets President Lyndon Johnson.
Okay. Interesting. Who does he meet?
JFK.
He meets JFK, right? Is that what it mm-hmm. is?
Yeah.
How's it feel to be an all-American? How do you feel?
I believe this boy said he's got pay or something.
Yeah. Back in the States, he reconnects with Jenny, but is arrested and institutionalized after a peace demonstration. Obligatory, sorry to ruin your Black Panther party, quote.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Also, Jenny is a villain in this
She's
story.
Worse in the book, just is so she? You know.
Oh, she's the worst.
Yeah.
She leads this poor kid on
mm-hmm.
his entire life, uses him every chance she can get, bails on him, then has his child, gives him AIDS, and then sort of dies. She's awful.
It's never proved that he got AIDS.
Well, she dies of AIDS.
So the doctors in the institution where he's being kept after this demonstration, they realize that he has a talent for doing math in his head.
Oh.
So he is recruited to be an astronaut for NASA. They make him a deal. If he will fly into space on an experimental mission for them and serve as a backup in case the ship's computer fails, they will make sure that he's spared from a prison sentence.
Dude, now that's wild, by the way. I'm going to acknowledge that. That's crazy. Also, I'm getting the two movies conflated now with Apollo 13
yes.
and Forrest Gump. Houston, we have a problem.
Well, he does have two people up in space with him, but it's not the two that you're thinking.
Right. It's not Kevin Bacon and the wrong Bill died, as we call him.
Yeah.
Bill
Paxton.
Yep. Not Pullman.
Bill Pullman.
We call them both the wrong Bill died, but only one of them is the wrong Bill.
For me, I cannot remember which one's which, and I don't care.
I know, because it's too many Bill P,
care.
Bill something.
Yep.
So he reluctantly agrees and joins the NASA program where he meets his two fellow astronauts. Here they are. One is a very grumpy woman called Major Janet Fritch.
Oh.
She will be the first woman to go into space.
She sounds like a Fritch.
It sounds like a fun character.
The other is the most experienced crew member, an orangutan named Sue.
No.
Who has already been on two previous space flights.
Why didn't they
Holy
include this
shit.
In the movie?
Why didn't they have that in the movie? Forrest Gump with an orangutan in space? That would have been incredible.
And Major Fritch.
Don't forget Fritch.
It would have made the movie, which is already a tight wire.
You would have kicked it over.
You got to balance this movie perfectly.
The thing is, there's just so much.
There's so much already.
You had to leave something out.
Orangutan space is probably the first to be cut. You're right.
So the space launch in the book takes place over after a couple of false starts. However, as the countdown begins, Forrest realizes that the wrong ape has been loaded into the spaceship.
Oh, come on. That would never happen.
Instead of Sue, who was chosen because female apes are less aggressive, a male ape has been put in the cage.
Oh, no. Did he try to F everyone?
No, I don't know about that. But the ground control crew dismisses Major Fritch's concerns about the male, which seems... She has, like, every right to be concerned about that. You're sending me into space with an ape that I don't know that's aggressive.
No. Yeah.
And Forrest Gump.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they take off anyway. Major Fritch and Forrest Gump go to space with the male, whom Forrest decides to continue calling Sue and tries to calm by playing music to him.
I hate this.
This is why this was not included.
The male orangutan Sue. So
and playing the harmonica at him.
Oh my god.
So this is when the novel's scenes would become too expensive to have shot. So after an altercation involving Major Fritch being hit in the face with a floating blob of ape piss
oh Jesus.
And Sue throwing a tantrum and ripping wires out of the ship's control panels. By the way, all of this is zero gravity, so
it's all oh my god.
The space flight comes to an end and the ship crashes in New Guinea. They end up captives of a tribe of cannibals.
What?
One of whom happens to speak perfect English.
Of course.
Wait, this is all in the book?
The book.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And the chief of the tribe of cannibals teaches Forrest to play chess.
It's, you know what it sounds like? It's like a fever dream of Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Like if you watched Forrest Gump while having 103 temperature.
Yeah, and that night.
That's what you dreamt.
So Major Fritch falls in love with a cannibal called Grurk. G-R-U-R-C-K. Grurk. Yeah.
Great character for a movie.
And decides to stay in the jungle with him. And Sue also stays behind in the jungle after saying an emotional goodbye to Forrest.
Oh, the orangutan?
My God.
But it wasn't Sue. It was the
male. No, it is now, though.
Okay.
So Forrest returns to the United States.
Wait, it says goodbye and goes into the jungle?
I'm free!
Oh, I want to see this version of the movie.
It gets worse.
So bad.
It gets worse. So Forrest returns to the United States, meets President Richard Nixon, and runs into Lieutenant Diane, who is now homeless.
Okay.
They travel to Indianapolis to look for Jenny, and they find her working in a tire plant.
Of course.
So not a titty bar.
Nope, tire plant.
Okay.
Forrest begins working as a professional wrestler, fighting under the moniker... fighting under the moniker The Dunce.
Dude, good lord.
This could have been the best movie ever made. Oh, man.
It wouldn't have worked with Tom Hanks.
No, it would have been the most offensive movie ever made.
Yeah. Yeah.
When Dan hatches a plan to rip off Forrest's manager, Jenny leaves in disgust. Forrest, who dreams of starting a shrimp business like his friend Bubba wanted to, decides to head for Louisiana.
Okay.
Before he can go, he meets a chess champion who realizes his talents and enters him into a competition.
Okay. He doesn't play chess in the movie, right? He does ping pong?
Doesn't he? No, he doesn't.
I don't think he does.
It's very hard to reconcile this book now with what actually happened in the movie because the movie is preposterous.
It's preposterous. Yes. He runs across America.
Yeah.
He is a war hero. He starts a multi-million dollar shrimping business.
Mm-hmm. He's a ping pong champion.
Ping pong champ.
He meets the president.
He likes to cut grass for some goddamn reason.
Football star.
Like a lot. That's in fact what he does when he has free time is cut grass.
That's right. He becomes a runner when he leaves the field, right?
Yeah, right.
Isn't that like...
He just felt like running.
I just kept running. So the chess thing does not pan out. Neither does him working alongside Raquel Welch in a remake of The Creature from the Black Lagoon, because that becomes a thing where he's going to be a stunt double in Hollywood.
Give me a break.
Oh my God.
I'm so angry.
I'm sweating now.
I don't know how to make this make sense, but this is what I read. And I don't remember which of my sources said this, but it says that Forrest and Sue eventually make it to Bubba's hometown. How did Sue get to America? How did Sue find Forrest?
I mean, Sue
the orangutan
decided that he was in love with Forrest. He jumped on an airplane, came back to the U.S., obviously.
Followed him to
found him
the shrimping industry.
Where he wasn't when he left him.
Yeah. What if... Yeah.
So I, obviously something is wrong in some of these descriptions, but here's the thing. I'm not reading the book.
No.
So we're going to just accept this as canon.
That's it.
Forrest and his orangutan male friend, Sue, make it to Bubba's hometown. And with the advice of Bubba's father, they start a shrimping operation together.
Dude.
This becomes so successful that he becomes a millionaire and manages to hire most of the people he's previously encountered in his life to come work for him.
Oh, you know what? It's like the movie Big Fish.
Yeah, but bad.
You know, at the end where it's like everyone in his life is there. And everyone's there.
He gets roped into running for the U.S. Senate, but is forced to drop out when the media uncovers his checkered past, namely that he'd have been arrested for assault, I think.
Right.
Eventually, he and Sue move to Savannah, Georgia, where Forrest performs as a one-man band.
So this is a goddamn buddy movie with Forrest Gump and orangutan. That's all I'm hearing.
Yeah,
is him and an orangutan go to space together? They go to the jungle together. They
start a shrimping business. Shrimping business. So then he finds Dan again, and Andy runs into Jenny, who has a son, who she reveals to be Forrest's son.
And Lieutenant Dan, who's supposed to be the one we feel sorry for, he's like, you seem like you've kind of lost your way, Forrest. Yeah. You're hanging out with an orangutan.
Who is this? Girl? Guy?
Girl? Yeah.
Guy?
What? You call him Sue, but it's clearly a male orangutan.
So Forrest decides not to be a presence in his son's life because Jenny is now married.
Oh.
So Forrest, Sue, and Dan move to New Orleans.
Ah. As they would.
Hell yeah, man.
Forrest, Lieutenant Dan, and an ape.
That's a sitcom right there.
It is.
Lieutenant Dan, Forrest Gump, and orangutan.
It's like into a bar. And
it's like Three's Company, but cooler.
Man, that'd be so fun.
So in the movie, Forrest leaves the company behind to return to a simple life at his old home after his mother's passing.
To cut grass.
Yep. But in the Forrest Gump novel, instead of returning to the States, Forrest begins raising shrimp in small ponds in Vietnam. After hitting it big with his shrimp company, Forrest begins to yearn for a simple life, and he sacrifices the company to Bubba's family before hitting the road as a one-man band. So it's going in circles. I don't know where the plot is at
right.
this point.
Yeah.
What?
Lieutenant Dan doesn't play a part in the company. Nor does he inherit it after Forrest leaves the shrimping business for good. I don't know what he gets from this friendship.
Nothing.
This also sounds like an 8-year-old wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then a 10-year-old gave me a synopsis of it.
Yeah, like you already mentioned he's a one-man man. He's doing it again.
He just did it.
Yeah.
So as sad as the film's ending is, the novel takes it an even more upsetting turn.
Okay.
While Jenny ultimately gets to live, she ends up taking Forrest's son away from him so that she can run off with another man.
Wow.
So, the movie.
An additional person?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
The movie. The screenplay differs from the book in a lot of ways. It does not identify Forrest as a person with savant syndrome. It sanitizes his sex life and reduces profanity as expressed by Forrest in the book. According to author Winston Groom, the movie took some of the rough edges off.
For a good reason.
Yeah.
It seems like it's a better story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Still a tough one.
Yeah.
So, Groom had actually envisioned the character being played by John Goodman. Speaking of John
Goodman.
Forrest
Gump?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that makes it sounds more like the book's description.
It does.
Yeah, just a big honking guy.
Yeah. Prone to violence.
Scary.
Despite screenwriter Eric Roth's character deviations for Forrest, Groom ultimately approved of Tom Hanks's Gump.
Mm-hmm.
Groom said in a New York Times interview, quote, "They kept the character pretty much as I intended. As I see it, it's a story about human dignity and the fact that you don't have to be smart or rich to maintain your dignity, even when some pretty undignified things are happening all around you.
That's sweet.
Director Robert Zemeckis warned Hanks that the film would be tough to do correctly. Hanks said, quote, I say, hey, Bob, I've got a question for you. Is anybody going to care about this movie? This guy sitting on a thing in these goofy shoes and this cuckoo suit with a suitcase full of Curious George books and stuff like that. Are we doing anything here that's going to make any sense to anybody? And Bob said, it's a minefield, Tom. It's a minefield. We may be sowing the seeds of our own destruction. Oh. Any footstep we take could be a bouncing Betty that'll blow our nuts right off.
That's what makes this movie so impressive.
Yes.
Is that, like, it is that. At any turn, it could have turned out to be the worst movie ever made.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, it is a beloved, charming little romp that we all watch every couple years.
Mm-hmm.
And also the score is partly what saved this goddamn thing.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
With a fucking feather flowing down. I mean, it's a great movie, but boy, could it have been not.
So for this adaptation, Paramount paid Groom $350,000 for the rights to his novel, but he got railed pretty hard by his contract with Paramount. When it was released in 1994, Forrest Gump ranked as the fourth highest grossing film in history, with a global box office tally of almost $700 million compared to a production cost of about $55
million. So that was a profit.
A huge profit. So what's the problem?
Right.
Well, Groom's contract guaranteed him 3% of the net profits of the film.
Okay.
Conversely, Hanks and Zemeckis received percentage points on the gross profits of the film, netting them approximately $40 million.
Oh my God.
So, budget of $55 million be damned, when Paramount totaled up all of the expenses, including Hanks and Zemeckis' huge payoffs, promotion costs, distribution fees.
There's nothing left.
It turned out the movie was $62 million in the red. So 3% of zero is zero.
That is insane.
Crap.
Wait, so was he paid $300,000?
For the rights, yeah, but okay. Not any of the proceeds.
It was one of the biggest movies of all time, and he made no back end. That's insane. Who's his stinking manager?
Right?
Figure this out.
Right?
Adding insult to injury, when the film cleaned up at the Oscars that year, Groom wasn't mentioned once in any of the film's six acceptance speeches that night, including Best Picture and Best Actor.
He wrote the goddamn thing.
Yeah.
He got the rights bought and, wow.
Yeah.
But you know, that's actually fairly common.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the tough pill to swallow. You're selling the rights to a film studio.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a part of it anymore.
Well, you'll be happy to hear that ultimately Groom sued Paramount, as he should have, and the deal was settled for an undisclosed amount of money, but he did say that he was left, quote, happy as a pig in sunshine with the settlement.
He made good money.
While all of this was going on, Groom was busy penning a sequel, which was released to the general public in 1995, titled Gump and Company.
What?
And it's a doozy.
I'm sure it is.
On the first page of Gump and Company, Forrest Gump tells readers, don't ever let nobody make a movie of your life story.
No.
Whether they get it right or wrong, it don't matter.
It's self-aware?
It's self-aware.
Whoa.
This time around, Groom's Gump isn't written to be an idiot savant like he was in the first book, but rather more similar to Tom Hanks's warm-hearted dope.
Right. He learned his lesson.
Yep. And per Wikipedia, and I'm just going to read this verbatim because what in the actual fuck is any of this?
Okay.
In 1980, the shrimp market has exploded and Forrest cannot keep up with the demand. Adding to Forrest's troubles, Lieutenant Dan sells off his share of the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company and the company eventually goes under. To make ends meet, he gets a job as a janitor in a strip club where he meets a former college football teammate who gets him a tryout for the New Orleans Saints. Apparently, he makes it on and saves the New Orleans Saints from a dead-end season.
What? How old is he supposed to be here?
I don't know, 40? Something like that?
That doesn't happen.
Forrest is kicked off the team when he's informed that Jenny has died and leaves town for her funeral. Jenny's mother is in poor health and Forrest resolves to earn money to support his son, Forrest Jr., who only recently became aware that Forrest is his actual father.
Wow.
Again unemployed, Forrest sells encyclopedias door-to-door, helps create the infamous New Coke that tanked.
Wow.
He helped create New Coke, operates a pig farm, all of which end in disaster. There was a note that I found somewhere else that says, then winds up on a hog farm in West Virginia where Little Forest shows up with a plan for using pig feces to generate electric power. But Gump screws this up, however, and is chased by an angry mob that he eludes by hopping on a train. Did he bring his son? I don't know.
No, you know what it sounds dipped like? On his son. Sometimes, stay in the pig farm, kid.
Sometimes in recording studios when people have writer's block, they have, there's a deck of cards.
Yeah.
Where prompts. You like, yeah, prompts. It like gives you a subject to write about or colors. Yes. It seems like that's what they did with these books. Yeah. Like it was just a random, let's just write down things. Pig farm. Chess
pig,
player.
Pig feces.
Pig feces.
As fuel.
Orangutan. Just all of it. Put it in a fucking bowl. And then we'll just pick out of it. And that's how we write books. It's wild.
Well, so he's hitting the rails. But then once he arrives at Union Station in Washington, Forrest sees a homeless handicapped man who says that he is Lieutenant Dan, mm-hmm. who had fallen in with those who took advantage of him and absconded with his retirement money, leaving him bankrupt.
Right.
On top of that, Dan has become half blind. Forrest, not wishing to see Dan homeless, says that they're going to work something out. And they live the homeless life for a while.
That's how they work it out. Forrest just joins him on the streets.
Forrest soon meets with a Marine colonel, Oliver fucking North.
Wow.
Who recruits Forrest into a clandestine mission to Iran, i.e. the Iran-Contra fiasco.
Stop it. Now he's an agent.
Oh, no.
Oh, he's a spy.
They meet with Ronald Reagan.
That's the third president, by the way.
Uh-huh. On the mission itself, they meet Ayatollah Khomeini. The mission is discovered and everyone disavows responsibility save for Forrest, who is jailed. Sometime later.
He'd be the worst spy. Stupid is as stupid does. Like, what?
Sometime later, Forrest and the other prisoners are eligible for a work release program to which they are put to work under a religious rehabilitation at Holy Land, along with John Hinckley Jr., where he accidentally exposes Jim Baker's affair with his secretary.
What the hell?
Oh, my God. This was published, the second one?
Yeah.
Oh my God, we have to get this book.
Box set.
Somehow it beat the first one.
Yeah.
Forrest then works with two Wall Street losers, I'm not going to say their names, where he and his son meet Tom Hanks.
Wow.
He and Forrest Jr. meet Tom Hanks, who does not impress them.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
He actually meets the actor Tom Hanks.
He meets himself Forrest Tom
Gump
Hanks.
Meets Tom Hanks.
Yep, in Wall Street.
I wonder if this author was hoping that someone would buy the rights for a second movie and didn't think about how they would do that.
How are you going to film that?
How are you going to film Tom Hanks meeting Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
He certainly didn't think that through. Shot himself right in the foot.
Wow.
Forrest is visited by Jenny's ghost, who was worried about Forrest.
Wow.
Sure enough, he's set up to be the fall guy for their schemes on Wall Street, those two jerks. But his trial is disrupted by news of a crash. He's later met by two MPs who tell him that due to an error in being medically released while in Vietnam, his enlistment has yet to expire and he's back on active duty. He's taken from New York to a remote post in Alaska while his son stays behind.
Hell yeah.
Forrest considers Alaska a nice change of pace from the superficiality of Manhattan, but ends up accidentally wrecking the Exxon Valdez after a drunken night with an old friend. So he's responsible for that.
Oh my God.
In the environmental hoopla that ensues, the Army spirits Forrest out of the States and decides to quiet his involvement, as court-martialing a Medal of Honor recipient would look bad. When Forrest is then assigned to the reputed worst job in the Army, cleaning mud off tank treads in West Germany.
Sure.
Forrest also meets an attractive blonde woman named Gretchen, who works in a beer hall. Originally from East Germany, Gretchen was spirited to the West, but her family still remains in the Soviet zone.
Too many things.
Forrest and Gretchen start dating, but when Forrest suggests buying Little Forrest an Oompa horn, Gretchen thinks he cannot afford such a gift on a private salary and suggests better rapport could be built through writing letters explaining his situation in Germany.
I mean, it's too many plot lines.
When Forrest's background in pro football is discovered, he gets recruited for the unit's football team. During a game, Forrest punts the ball.
Ah!
which flies over the Berlin Wall, causing another turn of events where people in both the East and West Berlin start breaking the wall with sledgehammers. So he's also the cause of the Berlin Wall coming down.
This one is packed to the gills.
Forrest is deployed for the Persian Gulf War, where he's reunited with Lieutenant Dan, who is half blind and homeless and in a wheelchair.
Let me finish it. Then he forms the Spice Girls. He manages boy bands for a time.
I mean,
is he the reason for 9/11? Let's just speed it up.
Oh, 9/11 comes into this.
Yeah, of course it does.
This is the 80s, though. So his tank crew captures Saddam Hussein.
Of course.
Norman Schwarzkopf is shocked at this while privately praising such initiative. He remarks that they got all of them in trouble with President Bush, as it was not in the orders to get Saddam, and he orders Saddam returned. They do so, taking Saddam to the outskirts of Baghdad. However, right afterwards, they are hit by friendly fire. Forrest flees to safety, but not Lieutenant Dan, who says that his time has come, like all of his ancestors who died in an American war.
Right.
Forrest starts harvesting oysters and builds it into a very successful business with the help of Forrest Jr. and all of his old contacts.
I'm about to lose my mind. Now he's got an oyster goddamn business?
He's doing a different kind of seafood.
When thinking about investing the proceeds, he meets Bill and Hillary Clinton at Whitewater.
Obviously.
The final chapter deals with Forrest arguing with Forrest Jr., who has taken up an adolescent rebellion by clandestinely drinking beer, and Forrest Sr. laying down the law in an old-fashioned way. Forrest gets one final visit from Jenny, saying that he has to set their son straight and that she likes that German girl, implying that she's ready to cross over to heaven. Forrest marries Gretchen and his story gets put into film.
You mean the book?
Yep.
Oh my God.
Apparently the book was hailed by Larry King as the funniest novel I have ever read.
Wow.
Now, before we wrap this up.
I'm tired.
I know.
I feel like I just ran.
I know.
I'm tired.
I'm also
She's
tired.
She's yawning over there.
I'm also tired, and I had to read all of that.
I'm yawning mostly to try and unplug my ears. They're still clogged.
Aww. Sarah has to go to work after this, real adult.
I know. We're almost done.
I hope
We're almost done. So, the script for this second book. Roth intended to follow a similar structure to the first film, because this was going to be adapted into a movie, with Forrest becoming involved in some major historical events. In an interview, Roth laid out some details about his script. You ready for this one, James?
Yeah.
Here's how Roth starts his script.
Okay.
I was going to start with Forrest's little boy having AIDS.
God damn it.
And people wouldn't go to class with him in Florida. We had a funny sequence where they were desegregation busing in Florida at the same time. So people were angry about either the busing or their kids having to go to school with the kid who had AIDS. So there was this big conflict.
Funny. Hilarious sequence.
I just love that. I was going to start off by having the little boy have AIDS.
Period.
And it was going to be this fun little thing.
Yeah.
Cool. Other tidbits from Roth's script include... Forrest becomes a ballroom dancer and dances with Princess Diana at a charity ball.
Obviously. Why did they need to add anything?
I know, you covered it all.
Good Lord.
He meets
Forrest makes a time machine and he goes back in history.
Don't give them ideas. He meets a Native American woman on a bus and suddenly finds his calling as a bingo caller on a reservation. Every day he'd go wait for his Native American partner at the bus stop. But what is this? She taught nursery school at the government building in Oklahoma City, the Murrah Building, and he was sitting on the bench waiting for her to have lunch with him when all of a sudden the building behind him blows up.
So the Oklahoma City bombings was also witnessed by Forrest Gump?
Yes, and his Native American friend was in there.
There's not enough time in a life for him to do all of these things.
But then there's my favorite.
Okay.
He somehow... There's no explanation. He somehow ends up in the back of O.J. Simpson's white Ford Bronco during the infamous chase scene around the world.
O.J., you might want to pull over.
Before you start to assume the ludicrous plot of this sequel had anything to do with why it never got made, let me reassure you that Paramount jumped at the chance to buy the rights to Gump and Company for a rumored $4 million price tag.
What?
So what happened?
What did happen?
Why?
Wait, hold up. You never mentioned 9/11.
Why wasn't this masterpiece of modern cinema made?
Why?
For that, you can blame Al-Qaeda.
You can blame them for a lot of things, including this.
According to Roth, he turned in the script on September 10th, 2001.
Bad timing.
He says, literally, I turned it in the day before 9/11. And Tom and I and Bob got together on 9/11 to sort of commiserate about how life was in America and how tragic it was. And we looked at each other and said, this movie has no meaning anymore.
Wow.
It never did.
No, but... In 2007, Paramount took another look at the project.
And it still didn't have
any... Nothing came of it. Earlier this year, Tom Hanks denied that a second film was ever seriously considered, mm-hmm. noting that discussions lasted all of 40 minutes. He expressed gratitude that he was never contractually obligated to do another film, stating, I've always said, guys, if there's a reason to do it, let's do it, but you can't force me. However, according to a report by Giant Freaking Robot, in April of this year, which is just an entertainment site, I think.
Okay.
I haven't been able to track this down. The sequel to Forrest Gump has officially gotten the green light and is moving ahead with production.
Stop that.
While Tom Hanks has been a bit hesitant about the idea of Forrest Gump 2, he is yet to make an official announcement for part 2. The new report, however, suggests that Zemeckis and Hanks will reportedly kickstart the production immediately after wrapping up their current project. However, I noticed that this report was posted on April 1st, so I'm kind of hoping that this was just some big, unconfirmed April Fool's prank.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the deal. I think we hope... Let's take a show of hands. Who wants to see Forrest Gump 2 be made?
I'm sitting on my hands.
Yeah, we're not raising our hands.
No one's raising their hands. I almost did.
You're kind of curious, huh?
Out of pure curiosity, it might be... Well, it might be one of the funniest things ever made, and it B might be one of the worst capstones to one of the most beloved movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Forrest Gump it's a perfect movie. Like, everyone feels good when they watch it, and we all know it's like teetering on whoa. You know,
I think
I mean?
It would sully the first movie.
I just couldn't watch another movie with that accent.
Yeah,
I couldn't
one
do
is
it.
Once in a
I
lifetime could, is enough.
I couldn't make it through.
Right, you can barely make it through this one as it stands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was tough for all of us to make it through, and we left feeling better somehow.
Speaking of tough for making it through, my voice is going away. My sources were RJ's blog, Screen Rant, Collider, Koi Moi, Celebrity Tidbit.com, Giant Freaking Robot, and Variety.
Love it.
Sweet. Well,
good job as always.
No
Ashley.
Kidding.
I want to die.
Is insane. I mean, I could have never guessed that it was that absurd.
Yeah.
Not,
it
never.
Just kept going.
I mean, think of a thing. He did it.
Yep.
So funny, man.
Well, on that note.
Yeah.
It is December 4th. I recommend that you go to... a Starbucks or something.
Yeah.
Get yourself a peppermint mocha or a gingerbread latte or whatever you're feeling.
Yeah.
And walk around a bookstore.
Ooh, walk around a bookstore.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to buy anything.
Highbrow.
Just walk around a bookstore.
You got your coffee in your hand? You
got your coffee in your hand. Barnes & Noble, Powell's if you're here in the
Christmas
Northwest.
Christmas is in the air.
I don't know any other bookstores. Borders, is that still a thing?
Sure.
Your local bookstore, go to the freaking library. I don't care what you do. Just wander around quietly by yourself with a cup of coffee.
I love that.
Or tea, or hot chocolate, or whatever
your preferred hot beverage.
Yes, it has to be a hot beverage, and it has to be Christmassy.
Okay.
You know?
I don't really have anything to recommend.
That's okay.
I'll just second Sarah's thing. Enjoy the holidays. Have fun.
Yeah.
Cut loose.
The animal hero of the week is Kevin Bacon the pig. A family.
I sent you this one, didn't I? Yeah.
A family in Pennsylvania was reunited with their pig named Kevin Bacon thanks to the actor Kevin Bacon himself.
Mm-hmm.
The adventurous pig had gone missing from his home for 2 weeks, causing distress to his owners. After actor Kevin Bacon heard about the story, he shared it on his social media, captioning it, "Bring Kevin Bacon home." Ultimately, the pig was safely captured using a sticky bun laced with a pet safe sedative, which, FYI, is also the way to safely capture me.
That is great. And then it turns out it was Forrest Gump was the one who caught him.
Right. He's actually the pig.
Eat the sticky bone, you piglet. Well, here's to you, Kevin Bacon.
And here's Tozia.
Here's Tozia.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Disney Dependent. See you real soon.
Chennai. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Disney Dependent.
And you can send us an email at DisneyDependent@gmail.com.
This podcast is produced by Producer Ash.
The logo is by Ryan Hatch, and you can find him at WR Hatch on Instagram. The music is by Ryan Knowles, and you can find him at Ryan Allen Knowles on Instagram.
This show is mixed and edited by Deanna Chapman. You can find Deanna at Deanna_Chapman. And this has been a Team Dynamite Goat production. All right. Well, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll be back here next week.